Hi, my sweets. Welcome back. Before we get into today's episode, first of all, I'm very excited about this guest. She talks about needling, artistic cutting. She dives into the psychology of being on both sides of this spectrum of masochism as well as sadism. And it's just a fascinating episode. She's very knowledgeable about this subject, and we've never covered these topics before, so I'm very excited about that. But I did want to apologize before we get into the episode that there are some inconsistencies. We had to stop filming at one point. I had to separate our dogs. She brought her service animal with her, and our baby girls were just getting very rambunctious throughout the episode. So I'm sorry about that. You might not even notice, but I just wanted to let you know that I apologize for those cuts that I'm going to have to make, and probably editing out some dog chewing noises and barking throughout. But I appreciate you guys. Thanks for coming back week after week, and get ready to enjoy this adventure of needling and cutting and so much juicy topics. Enjoy.
Welcome to Sweet Release Podcast with me, Barbie Jean.
Hi, my sweets. Welcome back. I'm Barbie Jean, your host. And today I have another Midwest girl with me. Em, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I know you live here, but I just found out that you're from Michigan, and I'm from Illinois, Chicago area.
Oh, yeah.
So, I have family in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I've always been, I don't know, I feel like I always gravitate towards that Midwest energy. It's so different than LA and the South, I'm learning.
Language. People always told me I talk way faster than I need to down here.
Oh, so. Really? Yeah. I love it. And we also have your dog with us today. She's being very sweet. But I'm excited you're here. Thanks for being here. And this is your first kind of time you've done something like this. I appreciate you.
Yeah. So I'm excited to be here, and we'll see where it takes us.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to start, you know, one of the main things that drew me to you initially is the fact that you are super into masochism, but you're also into like topping and being on that other side. I don't know. Maybe let's start with a kind of a story, or if there was a time kind of in your younger years that kind of opened the door to you enjoying pain a little bit, or.
Yeah. You may need a trigger warning for this. When I grew up, my lifestyle was very different. I was very active as a child. I didn't have a lot of downtime. It was just kind of push, 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 very athletic. I powerlifted, I swam. It was nonstop for me. Push through the pain, push through your brain, push through everything that your whole body's telling you, and just do the thing that needs done. So when I kind of got out on my own, it shifted for me, and I was like, okay, I no longer have to cause myself pain, but now I feel like I'm missing it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started my road. Had a little bit of a abusive situation with my first husband that kind of started that. And then I was like, okay, now I'm here. How am I going to continue to feel balanced? How am I going to continue to feel okay with myself while also giving me the control to stop it? Mm-hmm. And it brought me here to the lifestyle. we started as swingers with my second husband and ended up in the lifestyle based on my own search. I went down a rabbit hole. I purely bottomed. That's all I wanted to do was mm-hmm. bottom for impact. And then I switched up. We had an accident in June of 2024, and everything was okay. Like, accident-wise, I was totally fine with it, totally in control, which was so weird. Not what I thought was going to happen if we did have an accident. And it ended up with me in the hospital for about 3 weeks. And that's when I started switching to focusing on medical play and needles, because that was the hardest part of the whole situation that I had trouble processing. From bottoming, getting in the lifestyle, and all the way to now topping, it's almost been a year and a half now.
So. Yeah. Amazing. It's so cool. Oh, dogs are running down. Okay. Come here, girls. Come here.
Come in,
let's try to lay down. So, yeah, that's amazing. I feel like It's so rare to find someone that's like does both. I mean, I guess a lot more nowadays, I feel like you see people that are switch energies, but I do think it's so unique to see when you start from one side and then you kind of pivot to the other. I think it is also really common because you kind of learn what it is to be on that submissive energy side, and you can kind of like curate it in a better way or just understand how to make it a beautiful experience.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true, because I think about all the conferences I've been to, and I mean, a lot of the classes are either geared towards tops, doms, masters, or they're geared towards bottoms, submissives, mm-hmm. slaves. There are only a few classes that really focus on what it's like to be a switch. I got into needles first, specifically needles, because they poked me with a lot of them while I was hospitalized. And I have a huge fear of needles. Very big fear. I had to get over that very, very fast. Mm-hmm. So then I started looking at classes and I started diving in. Artistic cutting was that one step further. I had a very wonderful mentor, Miss CCTU. She helped me kind of bridge that gap and how to get there safely. But essentially, it's just making art in the skin with a scalpel. Mm-hmm. It's just a creative flow, like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So.
Do you feel like you're kind of like painting their pain in a way? Like, how does it feel?
Yeah. It's all about energy for me. Not necessarily painting their pain, but everyone reacts to pain differently. And that interaction with someone is so raw. It's so fresh. There's no hiding in, right? There's a reason they put us under anesthesia when they're going to cut us open. Mm-hmm. So that interaction, it just releases so much energy, and you end up being in this bubble with someone interacting in this way. And it could be totally silent, but it is like the biggest rush that you would get. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I feel like sometimes after there is like a bit of a rush after a big kind of energetic moment of any kind. Mm-hmm. And so I know like the first time I had it was like a fire and flogging session. And he had just like this fire wand and he was using that on my back and flogging my butt at the same time. And it was just this, such a, I don't know, a huge magnitude of sensations, mm-hmm. That afterwards, yeah, there was this huge rush that I had, almost like a high.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're describing?
A huge endorphin release. That's 100% part of it, right? It changes how you think, changes how you feel, changes how you react to the person in front of you or the person underneath the knife. Mm-hmm. And, along with that, all of the responsibility that I hold as a top, it's very different. I have to try to balance the two. And while I'm trying to balance these two very, very important things, I find myself focused, but not like it's just so easygoing. It's like everything in the world pauses. Mm. Everything is focused on the 1-inch line that I'm cutting into their skin. Nothing around it. No one around me. It's just me and them, and making sure that everything is feeling pleasurable for them and safe for us together.
Yeah, I love that. There's a moment in a lot of scenes that I've had where it's almost like meditative, mm-hmm. where it feels like my mind is clear, which is very hard for me to get to that place. Most of the time it's when I'm meditating. But sometimes when you're in that moment too, like you're describing, it can just be this like, just this calming presence that's like, oh, it's just you and me. And I'm curating this moment for us.
Yeah. And you were talking about flogging earlier, being an impact bottom. I love that you're comparing them, but it's so different at the same time, because when you have moving parts, there's so much more energy to the system, right? When I impact bottom, my impact top and I are very energetic. We move around the room. We're very vocal. We're very, there's a flow. There's a movement with us. It's almost like watching a theater in the theater. But when I'm doing a cutting scene or a needle scene or staples or whatever I'm about to do as a top, we're sitting, we're not moving.
Oh,
we're
interesting.
Very, like, you're listening to the breath of the person in front of you. It's so very low level energy, but also, does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like, it does make sense.
In sync,
yeah. Have you ever done it on the other end, or because it's cool to hear that too from your accident that was like, traumatic, but you've used it to kind of gain that power in a way.
Yeah.
And heal.
I think a lot of people have taken that step. Like, sometimes the reason we're here is because we have something that we haven't dealt with.
Yeah.
And this is the way we deal with it. We just exist in that situation and try to make it controllable for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I have bottomed for both needles and cutting. Taught my partner how to do it on me. So that's a little bit different than just bottoming. But I'm a very active bottom when I do those things. I talk a lot. I want to know that you know what you're doing. And that's my way of soothing my anxiety still, because at some underlying level, I still have that fear of like, what's going to happen to me when they stab me? What's going to happen to me when they cut me? Right? Like, oh my God.
That's fun though, right?
It is, because when you're done, you get to look at not only a beautiful product, but you have this renewed sense of trust for the person that you did it with, like in yourself, because you were like, oh my God, can I do this? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to be safe? Am I going to panic or am I not? Most of the time you don't. And then it's like, oh yeah, I can do this. I can make this work. Yeah. I am very like together. So that's a nice part of it too, challenging yourself.
Yeah. It's putting yourself in, like we talked about, that edge, giving yourself kind of this edgy experience and realizing that, yeah, you can push your edges. You can experience these different sensations or emotions and learn and grow through it.
Yeah. Sensations are a big thing for everyone. Have you done anything other than flogging?
I've done like crop spanking. Like, are you talking about impact play in general?
Sure. Anything in general,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, I've definitely dove into the kinky community a lot when I was living in LA. And the swinger community, but electro play, fire play, I've never done any needling or, anything that like bruises me or creates a mark is not my favorite thing. I mean, I've had some bruises, but yeah, the idea that you love the way it, like, you create this like art on the body, it's fascinating to me. I also don't have tattoos, but I just think my skin is precious, you know? But
For sure.
But there's a beauty in creating something, and then like the emotions that happened with the scene. I'm sure there's so many layers to it.
So many layers, and you don't really unpack them until you are like 3 days later.
Totally.
And I mean, I do a lot of this as pickup play. I'll do pickup play needle scenes at conferences. People I don't really know, people I don't like have a good background with, haven't vetted. And a lot of times we don't maintain that communication after the scene just because it's their personal preference, or they have a busy lifestyle, whatever their situation is, or my situation not aligning. And so in that particular case, you've done this beautiful pickup play scene. Oftentimes it's their first time trying something like that. They're going to have a lot of emotion, but they're not going to feel it till after conference when they have that moment to just breathe and settle. And I'm also walking away with that, because in my perspective, it's my responsibility to make sure that they're healing okay, that they're working through those emotions okay, and that they have a support system, because everything we go through in this lifestyle, it comes with a lot of emotion. And whether or not we know or have done that play, we don't really know how to or what to expect emotion wise. We don't know what's going to come up for us in the end or anything like that, especially with a new top, a new bottom, a new play style.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for how to kind of digest everything, because it's true. It's sometimes it doesn't come to you days later or weeks later, but after anything like that, I always think it's important and to encourage people to think about it, mm-hmm. not just let it, you know, digest on your body, but really like think about it.
Yeah. That's a good question. And being a therapist, I should know this. but the way I do it is I hate journaling. That's always my number one recommendation as a therapist. It's like, journal your thoughts.
I say that too.
But I don't. Okay.
It's not for everyone.
I listen to a lot of music. Mm-hmm. And there are certain types of music that vibe with me depending on how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And I'll often search for that one song that kind of resonates with me and I can actually feel in my skin. And then I kind of just write it down, listen to it a few times, and then I'll come back to it when I'm in a better state of mind and be like, I think this was resonating with me then. Like, then I have that time to process and I have like a touchstone for me to come back to that moment with how I was feeling through music.
I love that.
That's the easiest way that I can find, yeah. right? Everyone's going to have their own situation. People who have a big social support system love going out to events, love hanging out with friends, love just talking to people and being with people and are comfortable being vulnerable with people. That's going to be the biggest thing. Rely on your social support system. Find the person you can talk to. If it's not the top that was in that scene with you, then who did your aftercare? Or who's your battle buddy when you go to events? Who's the person that you can really turn to and talk to? Because they may not understand what you went through, but they're a familiar face who is going to be an active listener for you. And it's just a sounding board. Yeah. Instead of writing it, you're just listening to yourself talk.
And when you do that, the more you do it, sometimes even just talking to somebody about it, you like just start to recognize things that maybe you didn't even think about getting it out. It's similar like, to getting yeah. it on paper. It's like voicing it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, it's so funny because I just got telling this to one of my clients today. It was that you can do everything you want in your journal. Right. You can write everything about yourself. You can write your affirmations. You can read affirmations. But until you say them out loud, look at yourself in the mirror and say them out loud, you're not really going to feel a difference. Mm-hmm. The first time you say it out loud in the mirror, you're going to be like, "Ew, that was awful." But then you get familiar with it and mm-hmm. you're now having this open dialogue with yourself where things become more clear. You start listening to yourself more. You start being more aware of your physical sensations. And all of those start building together now. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm now recognizing this point. And it's maybe connected to this point over here. And maybe I should talk more about that with someone that I know and trust.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And, you know, you mentioned you're a therapist. Is there like, do you gravitate towards the like psychology behind kink at all or feel like there's... yeah.
That's mostly what I teach on. Most of my class list is the psychology behind kink and how we interact together. A lot of neurodivergence. Why do we have trouble communicating? Why do we get burnout? Why do we get drop in frenzy so easy? A lot of those things come up in what I teach. Furthermore, it's also been such a deep passion of mine that I've been chasing it for about 4 years now, trying to study it, trying to research it. I'm actually starting my master's program at UMN, Professional Studies in Sexual Health, which is essentially sex therapy, reproductive, kink-based, gender identity and fluidity, all of those things mesh together to understand how that makes us who we are. So yeah, yes. That's a long answer to the short one, but yeah.
Yeah. I've done some guest speaking at some human sexuality courses in the last few semesters and on the chapter on sexual variance. And it's mm-hmm. so fun to come in and give my perspective on what just the various ways that you can explore your, you know, your sexual kind of blueprint in a way.
Yeah.
And just kind of giving the students a idea that it's not a one size fits all approach. I think like our generation or some of the older generations, we were just taught that it was this one way. And I think the younger generations we're starting to realize that there's non-monogamy. There's these fetishes and kinks and things that you can explore to find more about yourself. So it's cool that you're able to like do that in school too now.
Yeah. That still 100% exists for me. Right. Yeah. I grew up in a family that is very conservative. They're, not super religious, but it's monogamy or it's not, and it's not the right way. And you're either a man or a woman, or it's not the right way. Mm-hmm. And I still feel a lot of that pressure, even though I don't exist in those two options. And so I think it's just so important for people to realize that even though our generation is becoming more fluent with it, recognizing that it's an option, we're still getting a lot of pressure from the people we grew up with, the small town, your parents, your grandparents, whatever it is, that's really putting social pressure. We're in South Carolina. We're in the Bible Belt. The amount of taboo that comes with this topic alone is insane.
Yeah.
I was in psychology. I've been in psychology for a very long time. When I went to do my first research project, they told me that I wasn't able to study ethical non-monogamy and just life satisfaction together because they didn't want their name on such a project. So it infiltrates everywhere. People have opinions about the things, and they're very strong in this general area, in our family tree. It's just everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been more cautious to share even, you know, in LA, people would ask like, you know, what do you like to do? Or what do you do kind of thing? And I would always say, you know, I have this sex positive podcast and brand. And here, I just say it's more empowerment, connection, you know, yeah. I use words that are a little bit more broad. I'm just naturally kind of doing that just because I do know that it's maybe a little bit more opinionated or, it's like the Bible Belt and there's just a little bit different views from where I was and where I started this thing.
People are going to be way more comfortable with the empowerment connection language, even though we're covering the same topic,
exactly,
right? Than talking about an orgasm or kink or any other relationship style other than monogamy.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. And as much as I hate it, it's like, okay, this is where we're at. So here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you, has there been experiences for you that have made you feel more empowered now that we're on like the subject, or even kinky sessions that have kind of opened a door for you to feel just like to love yourself more?
Yeah. I think my biggest transition with kind of putting words to who I was and what I wanted to do with my life, with that part of me, mm-hmm. was when I went into graduate school. My graduate professor, honestly, all of them were very open. They wanted to talk about it. They wanted to know about it. They were like, oh my gosh, you know, there's nothing out here for clinicians that talk about your experience and we want to know how to help you. And that's when I started like being able to put words to it and trying to understand how that made me different and the same as anyone else. So that had been super enlightening. They let me teach on it. They let me talk about it. They let me research it. And that's when I started putting the pieces together. My whole psychology interest stemmed from being diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, I probably would have gone into math or engineering, something like that. And now I'm here because of my own experience. So I'm just letting my own experience in kink and my desires and what I want out of a relationship carry me with my passion through my career.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So when you say like neurodivergence or being diagnosed, like how does that connect to kink for you?
Oh, everyone here has something going on.
Yeah.
Whether you are self-diagnosed or you've been professionally diagnosed, someone has something going on that can be explained through some sort of neurodivergent language, and that resonates with them. So not only do I have this like whole kinky community that loves this, but they're also neurodivergent as fuck, excuse me. And they are fully supportive of that. They want to support you. They want to listen to you. We are like, I've really been doing this and struggling with this. Oh, I did that. I've been doing that. You know, this is what I did. And now it's like a huge support system. It's community in like every aspect that we would mean community.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I think that's the biggest part of the lifestyle or kink is finding these like-minded individuals that make you feel like you're not alone, you know? And it's like, oh, wait, you're doing this thing? And I've been like secretly hiding the fact that I like this thing. Now I can like explore it too, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing because not only do you find people who also like the thing and then you feel less shameful or guilty about what you're doing, but then you get to learn how to do cooler things, right? And you're like, this isn't really doing it for me anymore. I really want to try this thing. And now I have this resource to teach me how to do it safely.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you've ever tried to Google something like Fireplay or needles, but they're not going to teach you how to do that.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of misconceptions out there too. The first time you look up any sort of, I mean, anything kind of in the BDSM world, it's like there'll be, you know, blogs or things just kind of saying not what it is.
It's like 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah, I know.
50 Shades of Grey was not kink in any way, shape, or form. There was no consent there. Like,
It was a bad display.
So bad. And there are plenty of other movies out there. There's blogs out there that picture it that way. You know, they have the cringy photographs of like the handcuffs and the chains, and they're in black and like very sexy images, when kink for me is like, yes, it's sexy, it's hot, but it's not just that anymore. It's a community of people. These are my friends. These are the people I rely on when shit gets real. And just the way media portrays it just gives it such a bad name, and it just contributes to the overall taboo. Mm-hmm. It's why you can't say, oh, I host a podcast on sexuality. Like, that is the reason why.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. Even, you know, needling, and I feel like artistic cutting, and that has, I mean, I remember going to this dungeon and I saw someone getting stapled and I was just like, oh my God, like, and it was just kind of like sexy and taboo, but also I was just like, gosh, I just can't even imagine doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's definitely something. I've even had someone on the podcast talk about knife play and how they're interested in that or have this fantasy of that.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of taking it to the next level, I feel like.
For sure. Like, the impact, the wax play we do, that's taboo.
Right.
And then there's like, once you get into it and once you're settled and then you see someone doing this crazy thing over here, you're like, oh, what am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
I'm so interested, but also like, should I be interested? What am I going to do with this? Right. And further contributing to that is a lot of dungeon spaces don't allow blood play. So things that I am interested in doing, sometimes I can't do in a public situation for the health and safety of others. You only see players who are well experienced because that's who the host trusts to do it. You never see people who are starting out. You never see people who are learning. So it makes it even more difficult to get into the situation.
Yeah. I'm curious, do people like bottoms that you're topping, do most people have a certain area that they want to explore this type of play, or is it differ?
Can you define area?
Well, when I think of like spot that I would be comfortable with, it's like meaty spots, like my butt.
Yeah.
Or maybe my like boobs in a way, like I like pinching sometimes, or you know, those are areas where I can take the most pain, I suppose. So is that kind of areas, or is it more like genital regions, or does it just depend on the person.
So if I'm going to do a needle scene or any type of blood scene with a new bottom, it's going to be in a meaty spot that sees the sun. I want thicker skin the first time around. I don't want your anything important to be close to the skin. Mm-hmm. I want to stay away from your tattoos, from your artwork, because just in case you heal and it distorts them, I don't want that to be your experience, right? So I'll do it on the back. I'll do it on the butt, on the thighs. I'll do it on the chest if you have good skin there. Sometimes if you're really firm, it doesn't work quite as well because I have to manipulate the skin a little bit more, which can be uncomfortable. Mm. So
interesting.
It depends. Some people do them in the arm if they want like one or two just to feel how it feels because they're used to things being done in the arm.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, it's. I'm just so curious about it. I'm glad you could shine some light on it today. Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating. Do you have a favorite scene that either you've curated or one that you've experienced maybe on the other side that you could share with us?
My favorite scene of all time with needles in particular was I did this chest bouquet on my girlfriend, and it was 32 needles ranging from 23 gauge all the way up to 16 gauge. And we had glued fake flowers into the hubcaps.
Oh, wow.
So this chest piece was a full floral bouquet, like across up her, to her shoulders and down her center. And like, it was beautiful on her. She has this long black hair and it was just so complimentary. The sun was beautiful that day. And it was just a wonderful thing to plan with her because it takes time. I need her help to situate it. We have to transfer templates. It's a whole bunch of like hard work to put it together. So that connection wasn't just for the 30 minutes it takes me to walk through a basic scene. It was for a few days.
Yeah.
And that's long lasting.
And that's a beautiful image that you were outside and creating this bouquet. I mean, that sounds so nice.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Even though they're needles, it's like, it's beautiful.
You wouldn't even know though, because like, I'll show you the picture afterwards and you can feel free to tag it on your social media or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. And it's like in this, not really a vulnerable space, but a difficult space because up here on the chest is very close to your bone. Mm-hmm. So it's hard and it hurts because you have nerves there.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of paying attention, watching breath work, counting. It's just, and that to see them glow when they look at themselves in their picture and they're like, oh my God, I want to take so many pictures with this. It makes you really happy as a top.
I feel similarly with rope, you know, because you're creating this thing on your body and then all you want to do is take pictures and like show it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Very drawn to rope for that, you know, specific reason. It's beautiful and you can do so many beautiful things with it. Yes, it can be functional, but it doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. And I love that side of it.
Yeah, it sounds like you love just like the artistic elements of it or just like the beauty of creating something kind of just appealing to the eye in a way.
Yeah, it feels good to create something that someone enjoys so much, mm-hmm. right? It's different when I do impact. I'll impact top here and there. And that's great. The energy during the scene is great. But if I'm doing something artistic like cutting or needles or even if I'm bottoming for it, I get to wear that art around or look at that art forever. It never goes away. I don't, you know, that feeling doesn't go away. I can look at the image and feel that exact moment of how they felt. It just burns deeper into me.
Oh, I love that. It's beautiful. I love it. I love it. Do you have any advice for people that are curious about exploring things like this and where to begin?
Don't do it. don't do it. No, just kidding. Find someone who is knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Okay. Go to your events. There are plenty of online classes for us in the U.S. or even in Europe, because I think they're half-based U.S., half-Europe. There's a place called Rain of Blood on FetLife. They are wonderful, host all types of different classes, no matter if you're interested in trying needles, cutting, all the things. And they are so safety oriented and so responsive. And if you're struggling, they'll work with you. And that is amazing. If you can't find someone local to you who knows how to do it, that online resource is top tier. It's so much better to have someone in person, right? Because they can watch you do it. They can talk you through it. They can problem solve with you. But sometimes that's not an option. You don't know that person. You're not as well into this community. So it's good to have those resources.
No, I appreciate that. Because I think too, this isn't something that you can just like find on YouTube, I feel like, or maybe it is nowadays.
You totally can, right? Because there are things out there that will teach you how to pierce yourself.
True.
Right. So all of those safety practices still apply, right? Because we're not going deep into the skin. The goal is to stay in the epidermis, the first few layers of skin. And the safety risk, if you stay there, is much lower than if you were to just do like an acupuncture needle. Mm-hmm. That would be different because you're going into like muscle tissue.
Oh, okay.
So when you are learning how to do it, reading things like the piercing Bible, looking at piercing videos and that kind of safety stuff is going to be a good resource.
Nice.
But trying to do things in a design and put things all together and how to stencil and how to not poke yourself, what to do if you have a needle stick injury, all those things are going to be a little bit more kinky specific, and they're more challenging than you think they are. So just take a pause and watch the video or the class, go to the class, talk to someone who's done it. And I just want to say this, do the bloodborne pathogen testing.
Oh.
Take the bloodborne pathogen class.
I don't know what that is.
It's bloodborne pathogens are like HIV, hepatitis.
Oh, okay.
When you do blood play with another person, you exponentially increase your risk. You're essentially at the same point as a phlebotomist.
I thank you for that. I think it's good for people to, you know, especially things like this where it's dangerous, you know? So you need the resources. You need to check yourself. Don't just go all in. I guess to wrap things up, would you want to share that last time you had that sweet release? Any and all details you're willing to share?
Yeah. I mean, it's not super something that is a big thing for me. It's probably about, 6 days ago now, maybe a week. I don't tend to focus on that as much as the energy that the situation really brings, because that's where I get my endorphins from, is that energy. Mm-hmm. Whether or not I climax or not, whether or not my partner climaxes or not, is just not something that's on like that checkbox list for me.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks for sharing. I did want to ask you before I let you go, if you did have, you know, it sounds like you're obviously into fantasies and creating sensational experiences, but is there anything that you haven't explored, or something that you want to explore, or something that's like on your bucket list or a specific fantasy?
The big thing I really want to do right now, which this changes on the daily, so give or take, but is a marionette scene. And essentially that's using needles to suspend your limbs up so it looks like you're a marionette. So I am definitely working on putting that together right now.
Amazing. Well, thanks for sharing, and thanks for your wisdom and just being vulnerable and opening up about everything today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And to my sweets, be sweet to yourself, be gentle, take your time when you're exploring things like this. And as always, welcome those sweet releases. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Em. Appreciate it.